Welcome to Secret to My Success. For the next hour, you're going to hear fascinating stories from the people and personalities who found their success in business and in life. Now here's your host, Alan Bornstein.
Good day, this is Alan, Secret to My Success, and I'm here with my buddies, Luis Salasea and Dawn.
Yo, 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 what's up?
How you doing?
Good, what's up?
You selling $1 million properties or what?
Working on it.
You're working on it? Couple, yes. 10, 15, 20 million dollar properties? That'd be a good day for you, wouldn't
nice.
It?
Nice.
5, 6.
Right? You know, Dawn's that real estate queen as well. She'll help you with any documentation you need. You know that.
Whatever you need.
Nice. Nice.
Right?
Well, she's got a new boyfriend now, so that's good.
Dawn?
Yes.
Are you still happy?
I am still happy. Things are good.
They are?
Very good. Yeah.
So why do you have a happy birthday balloon behind you? Is that the
Mike? No, this is Mike. Yeah, Mike's from last week. His birthday was Friday.
Okay.
And he's got a unicorn balloon.
Yeah, he's a unicorn, all right. Okay. So we have a really cool guest. We have a gentleman, Gary. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be on. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. So, Gary, let's talk. I got Dawn. I'm gonna let Dawn lead this because
she gives me garbage about everything. So give we need an introduction. Tell us, this is Gary. Who is Gary?
Okay,
tell
first
us
of all,
what Gary does first,
is it Gary or Gary? Okay, because you talk funny.
Tell us what his business is. What does Gary do?
Gary runs restaurants. He owns restaurants, right? Why are you giving me the USA number one sign? You can't talk English, Louis. Do you hear her talking?
Oh, yeah.
So I have a cousin from New York, and we were kids. I grew up in Connecticut. We called him Barry. And he says, I'm not a fruit. I'm not. I'm Barry, it's not Barry.
Barry. Barry.
Yes. So are you Gary or Gary?
Gary.
Gary, where are you from?
I'm regular Gary. Just Gary. Originally from Rockland County, New York.
There you go.
Living down in Florida, living the life for the last 20 years.
Okay. So you were born in New York?
That's correct. Born in Pearl River, a little town north of Manhattan.
Okay. Talk to me. Where'd you go to college?
So graduated Pearl River High School, went to Plattsburgh, New York, which is a SUNY school upstate New York near the Canadian border. Did all 4 years up there, loved it up there. Weather was awesome, loved to ski in Canada all the time, really enjoyed it. And then when I graduated, moved back down to the Rockland area and went into a family business. My dad owned a big construction company in Manhattan and wound up running a crew for him down there for about 8 or 9 years. Thought that that was going to be my career. And then one day I woke up and I couldn't move my arms. I had serious fibromyalgia and realized that, you know, working in construction and living in the cold weather was not ideal and had to make changes, you know, and that's kind of how I got involved in the restaurant business.
How old were you?
So I was about 28 years old when I decided I was going to make a change in life, almost 29.
But at 28, 29, every one of us thinks we're invincible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's probably accurate. And, you know, at that time, they really didn't know that much about fibromyalgia. They were talking Epstein-Barr, and they were talking all these different things. They kept testing me, and it just kept coming back negative. But I was just in excruciating pain, and nobody could figure it out.
They still kind of can't,
so,
right, fully.
They still, yeah, they still, although they do have medications now to treat it. So, you know, you look at it, you know, 30 years later, I'm not on those meds. I've managed to figure out different ways of life to try and combat the pain. And some people laugh about it. I mean, I found out that can't have caffeine, you know, you got to kind of have the same sleeping habits. So going to bed 11, waking up at 7 every day. If I stay up, you know, partying all night, the next day
you're gonna feel
I'm
it.
Real achy and a lot of pain. Yeah,
I'm the same
and,
way.
yeah, right.
And then the cold.
I am. It's true.
Yeah, right.
It is true. Diet and exercise. It makes a whole. It makes a huge difference. Your lifestyle.
Really?
Yeah, for that.
Yeah, I gotta figure that out.
Autoimmune.
I've heard that that's a good thing, but I gotta get back to that diet and exercise.
Yeah.
All right, Gary, I gotta ask you the important question here: Yankees or Mets?
So, grew up as a Yankee fan because I was always in the Bronx area. That's kind of where we would hang our hat. And I know you're a Red Sox fan, so we have the rivalry. I think everybody knows you're a Red Sox fan.
Yeah.
You don't take off that hat.
It was I'm almost
buy
a,
you a Yankees hat.
I know.
Buy me two. And I'll explain offline why I need two. But anyway, so the first time I met you and I'm wearing my Red Sox hat, was that like almost a deal breaker?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm good with it. You know, I mean, I've been a Pats fan, even though I'm a Giants fan. You know, Bill Belichick, I think, is, you know, an awesome coach, and I was a Tom Brady fan. So, you know, I mean, good is good, right? You can't debate some of those things.
Right. Louis used to be a coach for the Mets. Were you ever a Mets fan?
I was not a Mets fan, I guess only because I was a Yankee fan, but I didn't really follow the Mets much. I didn't know Louis was a coach, but he did tell me that he did play for a bunch of teams.
Yep. When he got booted from the Red Sox, you went to the Mets, didn't you, Louis?
Not a bunch, only five.
You only played for five teams at the time? How many were in the league?
20.
Okay, just checking. Nice. Okay, so you're a Yankees fan, you're doing Yankees construction, and you tell Dad you just can't do it anymore. How did he take it?
I think he didn't believe me at the time. I think he thought I just needed, like, some kind of a break. But, you know, it was conviction, and I never went back to working there again. And, you know, I guess the writing was on the wall. I could have just taken the business over, even though he had a partner, and the partner had a son, and the son was a bit of a moron. And I looked at it like, if I continue doing this, I'm going to be carrying this guy for the rest of my life in business. So between the pain that I had from the fibromyalgia and the potential pain that I was going to have carrying this guy, I realized it was a time to change, you know, and had a great opportunity, ran into a childhood friend from high school on the road. He was driving a convertible Porsche, pulled up next to me at a traffic light, and I was like, hey, how you doing? We used to wrestle together. He actually came to my bar mitzvah. I mean, I was close with him, and I said to him, what are you doing? He goes, I'm day trading. I'm trading stocks. You should come check it out. Here's where I'm at. And then he drove away. And a couple weeks later, I said, you know what? I'm going to look him up, and I'm going to take him up on that. And I went up and met with him, and he gave me an opportunity to come in and learn about trading equities. And guess what I found? My new career as an equity trader, which I did for the next 20 years.
So you didn't go directly from construction into restaurants. You did this equity trading. Tell us about it.
No, I didn't. I became an equity trader. Back in the day, we were called SOS traders, the SOS bandits. And we were just in and out flipping stocks for ace and quarters. And, you know, that's how I started. And then I really started to understand the market more, became more of an investor in the market, and just became an equity trader for myself. That's basically all I did. I traded my own money. You know, kind of eat what you kill. You know, you don't get a paycheck. If you don't make money trading, you don't make money. And I managed to do that full time for a long time. And when I started to become successful, I then wound up getting into real estate. And that's how I wound up getting into the restaurant business. Even though when I was in college, I was a bartender and a server. And, I liked the restaurant business because I like food. But it's certainly different between actually working in a restaurant and owning your own restaurant. I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm. So day trading, I mean, or doing any kind of trading with your own money, that's got to be pretty scary.
Yeah, it was. It was a learning thing where you get to really understand how much pain you can take, you know, psychologically, you know, because you think about it. Yeah, you're losing money, but it almost feels like it's just on paper, right? So you're trading off of an account. It's not like they're taking it out of your pocket. You don't feel it, but you look at your account every day and it's up and down and so forth. But really learned a lot of things in that period of time. And it was really about emotions, right? So you find that people get emotional when it comes to money. Mm-hmm. And if you're really that kind of a person, you will not make a good equity trader. Because you got to kind of stick to, you know, the rules. And I learned from a guy, and he was a technical guy. And basically, we did all charting and stuff. And, you know, 95% of the time, it always was correct if you followed the charts. Hmm. Even though along the way, you'd get emotional and you'd want to make, you know, different decisions. If you stuck to it, 95% of the time, you were right.
Wow. I have a bunch of friends always ask me if I'm willing to gamble on the Red Sox. I'm like, no. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'd never bet against them. So it means I'm not thinking. It's all emotion. So I won't do it. I won't get involved in any kind of business that I have to be emotional about.
Yeah, well, it's almost the same thing. So you think about the stock market, right? So when the market's going down, when you talk to the normal person that's vested in the market, they panic, right? What are you doing? The market's going down. I gotta sell. Well, as a trader, you're basically doing the opposite, right? So when markets are tanking, especially when they go down really fast, those are great opportunities to buy lower, you know, average down, or in some cases, you know, we've made a lot of money short selling. So stocks, you know, traditionally go down a lot faster than they go up. So as short sellers, we were able to basically borrow the stock, you sell it, you know, and then you buy it back at a lower level. And that's where we made a lot of money. So you're not, you know, as a trader, you're not always trying to buy low and sell high. You also look to sell high a stock that's been extended. You'll sell it and you'll buy it back lower and you make that difference. It's, you know, some people it's hard to understand, but it is a big portion of profitability as an equity trader.
So there was a bunch of different investigations that happened around 9/11 when a bunch of people were shorting a bunch of stock because they knew what was coming, and they made millions shorting the airline stocks and everything else. So it seems like you have to have a premonition that something's going down in order to make money doing that.
Well, again, you know, in that situation, I guess, I mean, right? So how did they know and why did they short those? And I don't know what the outcome of that was, but you know, it's probably just really looking at certain, you know, sectors and understanding them, right? So, you know, you're looking at, you know, banks right now, right? So interest rates are going up. You know, are the banks making more money now? Is now a better time to buy? You know, you look at airlines, like you mentioned the airlines, right? So I look at airlines and I say, you know, every time I fly, the flights are ridiculously expensive, right? Well, so what they did was after 9/11 or COVID, let's say, they reduced the number of flights, right? So those flights never came back and they said, oh, you know, it's you know, pilots, we can't get pilots. Yeah, I think it's a combination of both, right? I think the airlines realized, hey, if we have less flights, the flights are now full, right? So they're in demand. We can get more money for tickets. So we fly less expenses, we make more, and net to the bottom line, we're more profitable. Right. You know, so let's buy airline stocks because they're making more money now.
Hmm. So you're an old school trader. Louis and I are going to ask this question. I know he's thinking about it, but I'm going to ask it for him. Everybody's talked about crypto. We've had people on here, and I just don't get it. I mean, seriously, somebody just told me put $50,000 in crypto. I'm like, you're an idiot. He said he hasn't found one person that can explain it to him.
Yeah, and we had like the crypto king or whatever he was, right?
It was a crypto queen.
Crypto queen. Yeah. And then we had another kid who tried to explain it, and yeah.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get me to explain it because I am not a pro on it. I'm an equities guy, right? But I can tell you that it's like anything else, timing, right? So as a trader, we always used to say, buy the rumor, sell the news, right? So when they were out there hyping all these different things up, we would buy them. And when the news would finally come out, there was nobody left to buy them. So the people that had bought them before selling them, they go down. You know, I had a friend of mine that I used to trade with, and he was an excellent trader. And he was involved in Bitcoin from inception. And he invested a lot of time and money into it and created a piece of software, actually, and wound up selling it for like $150 million to a big company. And that's where, you know, he made a lot of money in that, you know, area. Now, you know, my money manager, guy that I've been using for a long time, he says to me, you know, his recommendation is that you take a certain amount of money that you're willing to lose, and you invest it in it, and it's either going to become worth a real lot of money or zero. And as long as you go in with that mentality, you can't go wrong. And I laughed. I go, okay.
So a friend of mine is telling me that he got a text from a woman. It was a wrong number, but they start talking, and she's befriended him, and they're now buddies, and going on and on and on, and she somehow talked him into putting $50,000 into cryptocurrency. And I'm like, dude, I need you to run. I need you to somehow get your money out. I don't know what you did. He's like, no, I have the passwords. I'm like, dude, these people are smarter than you. They're scammers. They're going to figure out a way to steal your money. I want your money out of that investment in the next 12 minutes, now. And I sent him article after article of these. Oh, hey, Bob, how you doing? Oh, no, my name's not Bob. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, it's a whole scam.
Yeah.
And somehow it has to do with crypto. I don't know. Hey, Louie, you're not sending anybody any money, are you?
Nope.
Okay, good. Just checking. Okay. So, Gary, let's get back to you. How'd you get to Florida?
So, I drove my car down there.
I wasn't really talking logistics of the vehicle.
That was good, though.
Wise
good.
Guy. Wise guy.
It just seemed like, you opened the door for it. So, anyway, after 9/11, I was working down in the NYMEX, which is two buildings over from the World Trade Center. And I was supposed to be there that day, but my daughter was just born and she was a little fussy. And I missed the express train going down from Suffern to Hoboken, which then I would take the ferry across to the point of Manhattan. And I wound up on a local, and I wound up 30 minutes later, and I was standing in Hoboken waiting for the ferry when the first plane came across and crashed into the World Trade Center. So thankfully I was not over there, and I didn't go over. At that point, I turned around and walked to, we had an office in Hoboken, and I went to that office, and that's where I was. But it just kind of changed a lot of things, a lot of the way that I was looking at it, right? I was down in Manhattan going, you know, we had an office literally a couple miles from my house where I lived in Rockland. But I traveled down to Manhattan because I wanted to be around better traders, more idea flow, you know, down in the heart of the financial district. And, you know, it just seemed like a better idea. And after 9/11, I transferred back up to, you know, I just worked out of the office that was close to me up there and, you know, realized that it wasn't worth whatever I thought I was going to get the benefit of. And I traded locally there. And then at that point, we started saying, you know, if I'm trading from here and I'm basically working from almost home, I can work from anywhere. We had a vacation home already down in Fort Pierce, Florida, and we just decided to make the move. You know, my fibromyalgia was an issue, and even though I wasn't working in construction anymore, the cold weather had me all jacked up. So I said, you know, that's it. Let's just make the move. So my life was agreeable. And my daughter was still young enough because we said, if we're going to do it, let's do it now before she's in school. And we moved down here. And, you know, we thought, oh, well, our family's up north. It's going to be hard. We're not going to like it. I mean, we literally never looked back. I mean, we came down here. We made all new friends. You know, family came down and visited us all the time because they wanted to come to the beach and the nice weather. And, you know, we went up to New York less and less until the point where we just never go back.
So I was thinking about you this morning. Do you understand where the name Fort Pierce comes from?
No.
No?
I do not.
Tell us, Alan.
I'm not brilliant here, but there's a guy named Harvey Oyer, and I didn't need any comments of that. You gave me that look. Okay, don't even go there, okay? Listen to me. Enough from you. So Harvey Oyer's family is one of the first families that actually came down to South Florida. Like long, long time ago. They're like six generations. And he was saying that way back when this was just a territory, it wasn't a state, and there was a lot of fight between the Indians. And it's a territory of the U.S. The military put in all these forts, Fort Lauderdale, Fort Pierce. And it was actually named after a military officer. And the Oyers were related somehow to this guy named Pierce. And it came up with that name, Fort Pierce. I thought it was really cool that these were all military installations way back when. So
interesting.
You're in Fort Pierce, buddy.
I never heard that story before. I heard a lot about the Treasure Coast and all about the treasures and the stuff they find out there right off the water here, but never heard about that one.
You talked about that too. It was the Gold Coast versus Treasure Coast, and it was the treasures from these explorers. Really interesting stuff. It was like 2 hours of, wow, I know something about Florida and I just forgot all of it. But anyway, so I was thinking about you this morning when they kept talking about Fort Pierce. So you land up in Fort Pierce. You're not going to be a day trader or you're not going to be a trader. What made you decide, nice Jewish boy from New York, you're going to own restaurants?
So there was a guy that I had met down here. He was also from New York, and he was in the restaurant business. And he was always saying, oh, we should open a place. We should open a place. And where our location of Second Street Bistro is located, it then became available for lease, and we were talking about leasing it. And I was like, "Yeah, I really don't. It needs so much work. I don't want to lease it. I'd rather buy it and own it and have the asset." And the guy wasn't willing to sell it. You know, he wanted to lease it. So, you know, we kind of went back and forth, and the deal didn't work out. And then a couple of months later, I guess he got sick and decided maybe he really needed to sell the building. It still wasn't rented. So he called me up and he said, are you still interested in buying the building? And I said, yeah, for that price I am. And he said, well, I think I'm ready to sell it. So me and my wife wound up putting up the money. We bought the real estate and then went into business with this guy. And, and we opened up Second Street Bistro. And it was funny because, you know, I thought he was like this great restaurateur. I'd been to his restaurant and stuff like that. And I found out in literally 90 days that how bad of a restaurateur he was. Uh-huh. And our partnership lasted 90 days. And then we broke up and I bought him out and had to figure out how to run a restaurant.
Wow. You're kind of lucky about the building. Because there's so many people that get in these restaurants. My buddy opened up a little restaurant or bought a restaurant in like 1988. And when I look back and I saw the story, he spent $750,000 for this thing looks like a wing shack. And basically the owner of the building made more money selling the business and jacking up the rent. And this guy was an indentured slave because he wasn't smart enough to buy the building. So that was a good move on your part. What told you to do it? Just instinct, or you just decided, I don't want to rent.
No, I had owned a bunch of rental properties and stuff like that, and I'd been a landlord. So, I try to, when it makes sense, to certainly own it, especially if you're going to put a lot of money into it, right? So, if you're going to put money into the building, wouldn't you rather put it into your own building? And then at least if it doesn't work out, at least you've got an asset that's worth something that you can sell.
Right.
Versus walking away from a lease and now the landlord has all your, you know, improvements and you're basically walking away from all of that money. So I always did pretty well in real estate. I like real estate and I still do it to this day. It's one of the components that really is a nice revenue stream. And as you get older, and you look to retire, it does, you know, it becomes about, you know, the rents, right? So as the landlord, you know, if I step away from the business, I'm still getting the rent every month. So, you know, you still can do pretty well with that. And, you know, eventually you pay off these mortgages and then you're debt free and you have a nice asset and a nice cash flow.
Yep. All right. So we're going to take a quick break right here from our sponsors. And yes. Then when we come back, you can tell us more about the restaurants that he has now.
You got it.
I know.
We'll be right back.
All right.
Does your business have at least one employee? Did you get PPP money round one? Did you wait too long to get round two? Even if you got PPP round one or two, or didn't get a dime of PPP, you might be eligible for money for employing people during the pandemic. The program is called Employee Retention Credits. ERC is being advertised all over the radio, TV, and internet. Companies are popping up promising you hundreds of thousands of dollars from the government. They are charging really large fees too. The ERC program is legitimate. The question is, are you using a legitimate company to get what you deserve? Many of these companies have popped up and will disappear after they've been paid. ERC is a payroll program. You want to trust an established and stable payroll company that will be there for you if there are ever questions from the IRS. Workgroup Payroll will evaluate what you are eligible to receive. No shortcuts, you will get paid what you deserve. Our fees are lower than anyone trying to get your business. We do not earn a dime until you receive your ERC money. Call us now to see how much money your business is legitimately eligible to receive. 561-953-2007 or email Alan at workgrouppayroll.com. Workgroup Payroll. We love small business. From one part-time employee to 300, we want to be your payroll partner. If you have questions about employment taxes, PPP forgiveness, or employee retention credits, we can help. Your business can be getting up to $5,000 per employee for 2020 and $7,000 per employee per quarter for 2021. Let's talk about how that works for your business. Call 561-953-2007. Would you rather get better service and pay less, or less service and pay far more? It really will take less than 10 minutes to save over 20% switching to Workgroup Payroll. We make switching easy. Get the service you deserve, the price you like. If you are using a large national payroll service, we want to help you. Call 561-953-2007.
Okay, we're back. Hey, Louie.
Yes.
Before we went to break, did you hear that? He does real estate.
I know she does. She told me.
Not Dawn. Gary is involved in Gary. Real estate.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
He just said it. I'm glad we woke you up.
You were just, he's an investor, right? Not so much.
So do you have a real estate license, Gary, or do you just kind of?
He's an investor.
No, I don't have a license. I just like to invest in different properties. And you know, I do a little bit of building. I do some spec stuff and.
Good.
Yeah, so I mean,
you got two people that have real estate licenses, Don and myself.
Yeah, and I'm up in your area. I'm in Stewart. So,
she's much better looking than Louie, but you know, Louie's a good guy. He's got connections.
Where's Louie? Where's Louie selling stuff?
Anywhere, South Florida, West Palm, Boca, Port St. Lucie, whatever. I have a property right now. They're looking at it. They're, it's 114 acres out in Brooksville, right next to the Brooksville Airport. It's already got the permit for commercial shopping center and an apartment complex.
Where is it at?
Brooksville.
Brooksville. Okay, that's out in the
High dollars, you know, $20 million range.
Nice.
Okay. Gary, let's talk about some restaurant stuff. You're going to appreciate this. Years and years and years ago, I used to own a business, and I became a partner with the NSVP, National School Volunteer Partnership Program, and they had us going in to high schools and partnered with high schools, and I said to these high school kids, and it's funny, I'm 20 at the time, so I'm like 2 years out of high school, I will pay for any class trip you want to go to. And what does every kid want to do? They want to own a bar.
Yeah.
Right? Every kid wants to own a bar. So I cut a deal with the local bar owner there, and I said, look, we're coming in on Monday. Can you leave this place really a mess? I want them to see that this is work. He said, that's a great idea. So we went in there on Monday, and the place was trashed. It was a bar, restaurant. The place was trashed. And he's trying to explain to them that it's not about standing here on Friday night and giving your friends free drinks. It's about work. And when he explained all this to all these kids, and we asked them afterwards how many actually wanted to own a bar, like maybe two of them. The rest of them like, yeah, that's not going to be nearly as much fun as I thought it would be. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the novelty wears off pretty fast. It is a tough, tough business. I mean, I like people, so that's what kind of brought me to the restaurant business, and I like food. But it is just, you know, you think about it, for us, we're open every day for lunch and dinner except for Christmas Day. So 364 days a year you got to work.
Nights, weekends, and holidays.
Yep, every single one. Holidays, you know, are big days for us. We're open every holiday. Only when we close, Christmas Day.
So what are the restaurants that you have? You know, can we talk about that? So
sure.
You say you have
Second
Street Bistro in Fort Pierce. And then what are the other ones that you have?
We own the Island Beach Bar and Restaurant, which is out on South Hutchinson Island in Fort Pierce. And then we have Lake Oconee Bistro, which is up on a lake called Lake Oconee in Georgia. So we have three locations currently. Okay. That's it. But we employ, you know, somewhere around 200 people in the three locations. So they're pretty big.
Does Lake Oconee close in the wintertime?
It does not. So it is opposite seasons of Florida. So Florida is about, you know, usually December, January, February, March, April, May, you know, the colder months when all the snowbirds come down. And the lake is really summer months because it's on the lake and golf. So May, June, July, August, September, October. So it kind of works out, and we go between, you know, from busy season to busy season. And it works out well. But, you know, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the restaurant business has been really good to us, but what I can tell you is that over the years, it's changed dramatically. We would always, me and one of my chefs would always joke about it, and we'd say, we're writing a book because you can't make this stuff up, right? Mm-hmm. The excuses, the stories, the events, the actions of people, the different things. It would just be a hilarious book that people would never believe, even when they were reading it. So we always kidded about that. Still to this day, I've never sat down to actually put pen to paper, but maybe one day it would be good. But what I can tell you is we've done really well in the past. Things are changing now with the cost of food. I mean, now with this administration, food costs have gone up so much and labor costs that, you know, it's just getting so expensive that people are eating out less. Your profit margins are less. And it's just become a much harder business. I mean, you know, I certainly, you know, for my daughter, you know, she's also a graduate and she is in hospitality, but she's in a different aspect of it with a big company that, you know, handles, you know, big events in Orlando and stuff like that. And she's not grinding it out like we're grinding it out, you know. She's on more on the corporate side. So, I just think that more and more of the small family-owned restaurants are just going to drop by the wayside because they just can't afford it anymore.
It's a tough business. You're dealing with cash. Or you might have at one point been dealing with cash. I'm not sure how many people show up with cash. And you've got employees. And there's always interesting things. You know, one of my buddies was running a restaurant, and he said that they had this bartender, and every time they were serving food, they'd find this bartender would reverse the drinks off the bill after they paid so they can make more money in tips. Like, they were always trying to figure out a way to scam the house, the employees. That's just got to annoy you.
Scamming going on.
Yep.
Well, I can tell you that the cash has gone away. So you're, you know, 90% of your transactions are credit card transactions, right? As a restaurant, if you're absorbing the transaction fees, that's another 3% that you're losing. So food's gone up, labor's gone up. You know, in Florida, at the end of this month, the end of September,
minimum wage goes up another dollar to $12. And we'll do that again for the next 3 years in the end of September, a dollar a year until it's $15. So, you know, you're going in a couple of years, you went from, you went from $10 to $15. And that, you know, affects, you know, cash flow and profitability in the restaurant business. I mean, these people are already making good tips. You know, it just, I don't know. I really think that if there aren't some kind of changes made, you're going to just – why would people go into the restaurant business anymore? To work 75 hours a week and make no money? I mean, I'd rather go get a job. Now they're saying places you – full-time is considered 30 hours a week. I'll go get a job 30 hours a week as a full-time employee, get benefits. And freaking have weekends off, nights off, you know. Just seems like a better future.
So your waitresses and the bartenders, they're not making the minimum wage, correct? Because of the tips? Isn't it lower? How does that work? I mean, I did it years ago, but it's been a long time.
Wow, you're really old.
Since I waitressed or bartended.
The way it is that tipped employees currently make $7.98 an hour. Plus tips. After the end of this month, it'll be $8.98 an hour plus tips. Oh. And they're supposed to, with their tips, make at least minimum wage, which is $12 an hour. So they all make that because, you know, they're making, I would say they probably make $25 an hour, if not more.
Yeah.
Or they suck.
In their tips and stuff.
Seriously, you know? if a tipped employee isn't making that kind of money, then they're usually pretty awful. But the tip credit, Don, in Florida is $3.02 an hour. So you take the minimum wage, they subtract it by 302. And the assumption is that those people will make that 302 back in tips. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay them at least through tips. They have to make at least that minimum wage with the tip credit.
And that's all they have to claim then.
It's always interesting. But like he just said, 90% of his clients now are paying by credit card.
Right, so then you have the extra fees.
So at one point there was cash, but now he's got his credit card. Correct me if I'm wrong, Gary. Your credit card companies are reporting to the IRS the amount of tips that your servers are getting.
That is correct. At the end of their shift, they have to put in their tips on what they're putting in. So that is correct.
Yeah, they've made it. Sucks. I'm sorry, Louis?
That definitely sucks.
Well, it sucks if you're trying to hide cash because now you can't. They're telling you very specifically, here's the amount of money that came out in tips. And at some point, they're going to do a comparison, look at his payroll and say, that's so weird. You know, we're seeing that you generated $150,000 in tips for the year, but you only paid $73,000 in tipped wages.
Not that he's doing that, right? Never.
No, he would never do that, right?
Not us.
Gary.
We're straight shooters, straight by the book.
Straight shooters. Oh,
yeah. Oh, crap.
Louis, you can't hide from it. You can't. They report that information to the IRS. You can't You can't hide it. I mean, you could still play with cash when you're getting tips, but you know what's so wild? They actually know by his food inventories what he's selling.
Any restaurant, right?
Right.
And like I said, there's no cash anymore. Everyone's paying with a credit card. The generation today, like my daughter and stuff like that, these people walk around, they don't have a dollar in their pocket.
Yeah.
All they have is a debit card. If they can't buy it with a debit card, they can't get it. So it's like, it's amazing. Like, you know, I mean, I don't even have a debit card. I'm probably one of the last dinosaurs out there that doesn't have a debit card.
Well, there's a lot of, that's like old school, right? Like you gotta have cash in your pocket. Especially like, you know, the men, right? They got to have at least a few $100 in their pocket at all times, right?
You're saying women don't?
Some do.
Louis, you have a couple $100 in your pocket right now?
Yes.
I do, but they have my face on it.
I know. It's so real. Me
too. So, Gary, I got to ask you, you're a pretty straight shooter, candid, tell it like it is, but 90 days in, I mean, the honeymoon's not even over and you have to tell your partner, we're done. How'd that go?
Well, I mean, it was a conversation that had to be, we had to have. And I gave him the option. I basically said, I'm not going to go down this road. And I mean, he was like literally, he's married.
He's hitting on all the freaking servers and the bartenders, our employees. He's hitting on them. He's behind the bar. He's drunk. He's trying to serve people when his bartender's back there to do it. It was just, it was horrifying. So, you know, I said to him, you can either buy me out or I'll buy you out. And, you know, he wasn't in a financial position to buy me out. So by default, I bought him out. And then, you know.
But how do you come up with a value 90 days into a guy who's won, destroying your business, every bit of morale in the office? I mean, seriously, it had to, writing that check to make that guy go away had to suck.
It did. I think that, I don't, it was a long time ago, but I think he put up $100,000 into the business, and 90 days later, I gave him $125,000 to get out.
Wow. That's a nice little investment on his part to be a jerk.
Yeah. But for me, it was, you know, it was, it had to be done because I wasn't going to continue to go down the road of building a profitable business with a partner that was doing stuff like that. So, you know, fun is fun, but that was just wrong. You know, that was a lawsuit waiting to happen, you know.
There's this insurance called EPLI, which is an employer's professional liability. And for most any other businesses, it's almost reasonable. But in the restaurant industry, that happens so much. It's like really expensive to get it. And we had a guy that actually told us he went to a PEO because he liked hitting on all of his employees. And they convinced him that he could.
Had him covered.
I'm like, you're an idiot. It's co-employment. You're still on the hook.
That's hysterical.
Seriously. He's like, well, what do I do? And I said, well, I'll tell you what.
Stop hitting on everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Your wife's beautiful. She's really nice. And, you know, when you're here working, you shouldn't, you know, trying to dip the pen in company ink. What are you doing?
That's funny.
Oh, yeah. Some of these guys are crazy.
So at what point did you decide to expand? You started with your the first restaurant, right? Was that Second Street Bistro was the first one?
Yeah, Second Street was the first one. And then we actually expanded up to the lake. So we had we have a lake house up on Lake Oconee, and we've been up there since 2008. So we would spend most of the year down in Florida, and summer times we would go up to Lake Oconee to our lake house, and we'd spend the summer on the lake. And so we bought that in 08. And yeah, I mean, we were enjoying that, and it was ridiculous. We'd go up there, and it was such a cool place, and there was never a restaurant open late. There was nothing open on Sunday and Monday. I mean, it was just, I was like, what's going on up here? I mean, nobody wants to work. Nobody wants to stay open. You'd roll off the lake at, you know, it's still light out. We'd have guests up there. We'd get off the lake, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock, we're showering, we're going out to dinner, and the restaurants were all closed.
Hmm.
So, you know, I realized that there was an opportunity, but, you know, we really didn't do anything about it. And there was this beautiful old building that was for sale. It was a restaurant that had gone out, and we just drive by it. It was on the main road up on the lake there all the time. We drive by, and there was a sign out there, and it was for sale for like $1.2 million. And we went and we looked at it, and we're like, it's too much money. It's not the right time. And then another year would go by, and we go look at it, and it was $1 million. And, you know, another couple of years we went by, and it was $8.99.
Yeah.
And so it actually sat empty for 10 years.
Wow.
And finally there was a sign up that said $6.99 it was for sale. And it had just gotten repainted and a new roof, and they cut all the landscaping, and it actually looked pretty good. So I put my real estate hat on, and I was like, this seems like a pretty good deal. So I went up there, and I wound up, you know, negotiating back and forth, and I got it in contract for $590.
Nice. Oh, wow.
So we originally were looking at $1.2 million, we wound up buying for $590, you know, renovated it, and then wound up opening right as COVID hit. I mean, literally, you couldn't have timed it any worse. It was March, like, 20th of 20, was it 2020 or 2019? No, 2020.
Yeah.
That we opened. And we literally opened on a Friday night. It was our first night open. We opened up. It was a horrible weather. It was like a monsoon. It was just the worst day. The next day, the county forced all the restaurants to close because of COVID.
Hmm.
So we were open for one day after renovating for like 10 months and then closed. And we closed for a month. And then when we opened up, it was like to go. And, you know, it was just really, it was really challenging, you know. And eventually, you know, when we were able to open and people started coming out, it wound up doing pretty well. And then, you know, we put a covered porch on and we put an addition on, and, you know, and we've, what I thought was going to be like a seasonal business because of COVID. So COVID was, you know, it was like a two-sided, right? It was bad because it hurt our business initially. But what happened was it wound up being good in the long run, because what it did was a lot of people that had two homes wound up moving, yeah, working remotely, and then moving out to the lake. So what was supposed to be more of a seasonal business now became year-round, because now there's so many more people living out there.
Nice.
I got to ask you a question.
Yeah, so it worked out at the end, and yeah, it was busy.
That's awesome. You must watch some of these TV shows, the restaurant shows, Restaurant Impossible, Bar Rescue, any one of these shows? Yes? No?
I love John Taffer, and I watch Bar Rescue. I mean, he's a New York guy, and I just think he's awesome.
So Taffer, that restaurant I was telling you about, where the guy was hitting on every employee, so Taffer decides to go into that restaurant, that same restaurant, and they're going to do the whole theme that he's a cokehead and he's hitting on all the employees. And he decides that he didn't want to do that. And I'm like, are you kidding? That is you. I mean, it was perfect. And this guy was going to fix your place and he wouldn't do it. But I mean, some of that's drama for TV, but how much of that makes you think or get your employees in a different place when they see some of the stuff that's going on, like the inside of another restaurant?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, some of it's TV stuff, but some of it is real. I mean, you know, you would go, if you could walk into some of these kitchens and walk-ins and see what they really look like,
right?
You would never eat in these restaurants.
And the chaos never. That goes on. Yep.
You're saying your restaurants look nothing like that.
I'm saying that I think our staff does a really good job on keeping up to par as far as health department and stuff like that. But our restaurants they're kind of a different animal. Like, it's busy. You have a lot of people working there. So it doesn't fall all on one person.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, when you see, like, these Restaurant Impossible and some of these things, they're like small operations of a guy that's burnt out, you know, and he's not cleaning the way he should because he's there, you know, 16 hours a day. And, you know, in our situation, we have so many people working there. There's no excuses, right? If it's not you, it's the next guy. It's this one. It's that one. You know, it's not falling on one person. So, you know, keeping some of those standards up, you know, I think becomes an easier task when you have a bigger staff.
I can tell you, I've been a Second Street Bistro, and your food's amazing, and your staff is as nice as they could be. It's pretty impressive.
I appreciate that, man. I think that, you know, as always, we're always changing. We're going through some changes now. We're always trying to improve. And, you know, and that's the thing about the restaurant business. You can't get stale, right? You got to always kind of try and up your game. And we always say, you know, who's the bottom five, right? So when you have a place that's got, you know, 50 people working it, you always got your bottom 10%. You always got your bottom five people. Who are they? You know, because you're always trying to, you know, increase your level of service and your food quality. And, you know, it's food and service at the end of the day, especially as you have to raise prices because food costs and labor costs go up. So when people come in, you know, they're paying a lot of money now, sort of expecting better quality food and service.
Mm-hmm. Give us a story. Tell us something that you've never told anybody else about owning a restaurant. Some customer you kicked out. Give us something good. Give me juice.
Oh, wow.
You told me you were going to write a whole book. You got to have something.
Yeah, but I mean, some of this stuff on the book is,
yeah. Come on, Gary.
You can't say this stuff on air.
We're saving it for the book, and I'll be sure to come on your show again. And I'll let everyone know when the book's ready to come out so they can get first dibs on it.
Oh my God, this guy is a salesman.
No. I'm looking for a Dine and Dash story. Is there anything like that? That's just one good one. Some employee that just did something that you said, yeah, enough.
I mean, you know, some of the stuff you can't even make out, right? We have cameras all over the place, and we put them there for insurance liability reasons, right? So you have a lot of frivolous claims, people claiming they fall, they sue you for any little thing, you know. You're wearing high heel pumps, you're 400 pounds, and you're walking through, a restaurant, right, and your heel breaks. And you fall, and now you sue the restaurant, you know, and say that the floor was wet, right? Yeah. So, I mean, so we put these cameras all around. I even put them inside the walk-ins, right? So we have a guy, and he's in the walk-in, the food walk-in, and he's taking meatloaf, and he's shoving it down his pants.
Oh, my God.
Okay? So, you know, later on, we call him into the office and, you know, say, hey, you know, so is everything okay? How you doing? You know, or is everything all right at home? Do you have enough money? You eating? You know, I go, because if you're starving, you can sit right here and I'll buy you a meal. But you can't go in and steal stuff, right? That's against the law. You know, so the guy stealing food, putting it down there. You know, I mean, just that's one of the stories. Then we had a story where the dishwashers, they got tired of washing all these dishes and stuff. They took all the pots and pans and they threw them in a garbage bag and threw them in the dumpster.
Oh, my God.
So now you don't have them to cook on, so because they freaking basically have thrown them in the garbage.
They didn't want to wash them.
It just goes on and on. Some of the stories, you know, they're mostly about your employees, but there are some classic ones about, you know, people that are your customers too. But
Louis, have you ever worked in a restaurant?
I already told you, I used to own one, and I did the little.
No, you told me you own one, but that doesn't mean anything that you've actually worked in one.
No, I did not. I did not work in it. I was there a lot, and it's a pain in the butt. People steal you. I mean, we got cameras and all that other stuff, and people steal you something.
Gary.
We're about at it. We have a few minutes left. So,
Gary, let's talk. What kind of big promotions you got up at 2nd Street and your other location up in Fort Pierce?
Well, so coming up, we got some great ones. Oktoberfest is huge, right? So we've got a street fair. We close down the street and do a block party. It's a big stage out there. It's Saturday the 20th. What is it? The 30th, I think, which is the Saturday. So Oktoberfest is that day, the block party. We do our Wiener Schnitzel. We do our potato cakes. We have a whole bunch of food specials. It's an awesome, awesome time. Love to invite everyone up there for the block party. And then at the end of the month, we do a couple of cool things. We do a Halloween pub crawl. So the local businesses down there, local restaurants get together. We do a pub crawl. You go from bar to bar walking downtown. We do a $5,000 cash prize for the best contest. We set up a stage on the street, which is also an awesome thing. We're going with a bunch of our friends. We're all dressing up as white trash this year. We usually get about 10 of us.
Don, you could win that one.
Yeah, man, wait till you see my contest, man. I got this big chain. I got a mullet. I got these teeth. I've got, you know, it's going to be awesome, man. Maybe you'll come up. You and some of your posse will come up and enjoy the
Dawn,
pub crawl.
Don, you could do it.
Right up there.
You know, I don't know if I told you, Gary, but Don is a hog rider, too. She's got a Harley.
I worked at Harley for a lot of years, Treasure Coast, down in Stewart.
Oh, all right, cool.
Yeah.
So Gary just came back from a trip in Europe driving his Harley.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
cool.
We just rode through. We did 2 weeks. We rode through Austria, Germany, Switzerland, and Italy.
That's awesome.
It was like one of those bucket list things, but it was pretty awesome.
Nice.
So, but I appreciate you guys having me on the show, man, and hopefully I didn't bore you too much and you'll invite me back for another chat.
You did a phenomenal job. Gary, you're a good man. I'm telling you, your restaurants have impressed me. Your staff is amazing. Your food is awesome. I'm going to do the big shout out for the shrimp grits. They are awesome. Seriously. I'm a fan.
You know, Alan's a creature of habit.
Yes.
He comes in, he liked one dish, and that's the only dish he gets every time he comes in there.
That's
so,
it.
We're going to make sure that our shrimp and grits stays on par. And we do it with an awesome Creole sauce. The grits have a cheesy lobster base in them. So it's a little special. You know, we have these, we have this one ingredient that we know if we add it to all of our dishes, people will enjoy it. And it's called love.
Love.
We just put love in everything that we make.
Don, you hear that?
Love. Yeah, I heard
you
it.
Need to put more love into the show.
I do.
Yes.
You think so?
You got it.
Okay.
Gary, you're a good man. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Gary.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Take it easy.
Bye, Louie.
Workgroup Payroll. We love small business. From one part-time employee to 300, we want to be your payroll partner. If you have questions about employment taxes, PPP forgiveness, or employee retention credits, we can help. Your business can be getting up to $5,000 per employee for 2020 and $7,000 per employee per quarter for 2021. Let's talk about how that works for your business. Call 561-953-2007. Would you rather get better service and pay less, or less service and pay far more? It really will take less than 10 minutes to save over 20% switching to Workgroup Payroll. We make switching easy. Get the service you deserve, the price you like. If you are using a large national payroll service, we want to help you. Call 561-953-2007. Thanks for listening to The Secret to My Success. For more episodes, go on over to secrettomysuccess.com. That's secret, the number 2, mysuccess.com.